Right, good evening everyone and welcome to EG's latest Cardiff Question Time event. My name is Damien Wilde and I'm editor of EG, and welcome back to those of you who were just next door last year when we staged this event just days after the referendum. And back then we didn't know what the upshot of Brexit would be, we didn't know who would be Prime Minister come the end of the year, and we're all bemoaning the state of our politics. So nothing's really changed, has it, a year on. But if it's any consolation, that picture of slight uncertainty around it's very similar all around the UK. In the last few weeks, the EG Question Time truck, I imagine it's very similar to Robbie Williams's one last night, has rolled into Leeds, into Newcastle, into Reading, and into London, and we've seen similar expressions, heard similar concerns, and fielded similar questions. There are always common themes at these events, and those of you who have been coming for a few years will know that placemaking, connectivity, infrastructure, for instance, and the like always crop up. But there's another prevailing attitude out there across the UK at the moment, especially in the built environment, and it's around uncertainty, of course. But that prevailing attitude seems to me to be one that that is really that unless and until there's clear evidence of the contrary, and at this stage there's not, let's continue to be cautious, but assume that things will continue broadly as they are, and that's not a bad philosophy. And it'll be interesting to see whether our panel and you, through your questions and comments, agree with that view tonight. So just before I introduce our panel, just a few points of housekeeping. You all know how this works by now. Raise your hand and we'll get a microphone to you very quickly to ask a question or to make a point. Feel free to disagree with me or with the panel. Panel, feel free to disagree with each other as well. That always makes it livelier. And also, as well as doing it the old-fashioned way, you can get your phones out and use Slido. If you go to slido.com, you can put in questions in there, and you can like questions to the top as well, if there's a particular one you want to ensure does get asked. And use the code, the hashtag Cardiff for that. And lastly, if you're tweeting about the event, please use the hashtag EGQT. Sorry to be confusing, but hashtag Cardiff for Slido, EGQT for Twitter. Right, to our panel. And closest to me is Caroline O'Flaherty, a partner in commercial property at Hugh James, where she advises on site acquisition, regen projects and developments. Next to her is Clinoth Griffin Williams, head of content at Grebay Media, a production company specializing in drama, documentary, factual and arts program. Next to her is Ross Griffin, director and head of Cardiff Commercial Investment at Savills. We then have Mark Bowen, managing director for Andrew Scott, one of Wales' oldest construction companies. And Mark is also a member of the Wales CBI Council. Then Ken Poole, head of economic development at Cardiff Council. And last but not least, on my far left is Janet Bell, commercial engagement director for Specific, a national innovation centre led by Swansea University, whose vision is to transform buildings into power stations. So we'll get straight down to questions. And last year, quite a lot of the theme was dominated by football. It was Euro 2016, of course. And so we might as well start off with a football-related question, which came in on Slido earlier from Nia Elias. What did the successful hosting of the UEFA Champions League final teach us as a city? Ken.
I think the first and important fact it taught us that by winning a major global event like the Champions League, it can lead to an enhanced profile, enhanced connections with a much, much bigger audience. The game was shown to an audience of 200 million throughout the world. And we were contacted by a wide range of media companies looking for content on Cardiff, from Colombia to Romania. And it was absolutely staggering. In fact, one of my claim to fame lines now is I'm big in Bogota, having been contacted by Columbia TV station and interviewed live about Cardiff, and a Spanish company contacted me recently from the area saying there's a big piece on Cardiff from one of the major Spanish business newspapers quoting and talking about the city. So from that perspective shows the benefits and merits of actually competing and winning a global event such as this. Yes, there were challenges, and I know parts of the city identified challenges, but in the long run, I think it'll help aid the repositioning of the city and the repositioning of Wales, because we brought people, investors into the city that we would have never, ever brought into Cardiff. There are people who came into Cardiff from all over the globe. We took about 20 people to the game from New York, California, Europe, Africa, South America, for example, but investors and profiles of which we would have never, ever got into Cardiff and Wales. So it shows you the benefits of the strategy, and we need to keep pursuing this strategy, but at the same time, getting some balance in here so we don't have some of the other issues that have been raised regarding the Champions League.
Can it be measured?
Well, in fact, we predicted a 45 million impact on a city in the region, and I'm pleased to say that Cardiff Metropolitan University has been commissioned by Welsh Government, and they are due to publish their impact analysis shortly, and that impact analysis not only looked at the real hard figures of investment, attraction and hotel spend and direct and indirect expenditure, but also over the weekend, I think there was a substantial interview program as well with visitors to the city. So we're hoping that's going to show some, you know, measurable impact in terms of the city. But what we can't measure is the profile that the city has obtained as a result, and Wales obtained as a result of bringing this event into Cardiff, into Wales.
Okay, and Klinos, you sell internationally. Does it help your case?
I think in terms of people knowing about where we are and what we're doing, I think what we need to do more of, which is in the same vein of that, is champion what we're doing here and what amazing content or produce is kind of coming out of Wales in general. I think we do a lot of co-productions and we sell our programme. We do a lot of domestic things with broadcasters such as ITV and BBC, but also we do co-productions where we sell versions all around the world. And that is, you know, there's a lot of money in terms of funding for that. It's also working with people like the Welsh Government in order to support companies like ours for top-up funding. So, for instance, our funding circles, we'll have 50% coming from the UK, 40% coming from international funders, and then the rest either from distributors or the Welsh Government have helped top us up in that sense. So, and that means that content made in Wales by people based in Cardiff predominantly for us is being distributed all around the globe for years to come. So I think it's championing what we've got to offer here.
And is that championing as good as it could be, do you think?
No, I think we're terrible at doing it. I think we're awful. I don't know whether that's a Welsh or British thing, but I think, you know, I'm Deputy Chair of RTS Wales, and what we're hoping to do next year is really shout about the amazing content that's coming out of Wales. You know, there's lots of network television that's made here in Wales. There's highly skilled people working in creative sector here in Wales. The growth of the creative sector in Wales has been phenomenal. I think I was reading a stat today that between 2005 and 2013, 58% rise in employment in the creative sector alone. So I think, you know, we are bringing in highly skilled people. We're also supporting and nurturing that skill set. And we're making content that's world-class content. And I think we don't do enough to shout about it.
Okay, thank you. And Ross, did the hosting of the Champions League final help your cause?
Yeah, I think anything that puts Cardiff on the map more, it's a capital city, and I think a lot of investors, property investors, forget Cardiff is one of only three capitals in the country. So anything that boosts that, such as the Champions League final, which is second biggest sporting event in the world, is fantastic to put it on the map. You know, that day when thousands of people would have come into Cardiff Central, got onto Central Square. I mean, as we all know, for many years, Central Square was atrocious. It's phenomenal what Rite Acres, Cardiff Council, everything's done. So putting Cardiff and what's going on in front of that station on the map is brilliant. And I've been with some investors this week for a couple of buildings we're selling at present, a South African fund, and just a couple of funds from London. And they've all gone, oh yeah, Cardiff had the Champions League. Actually, Cardiff now is starting to really punch above its weight. We've still got a lot to do, I have to be honest, but all that is, it just all helps, without a doubt.
Okay, thank you. Mark, to just build on that question, one that's come through on Slido, following Brexit, should we now be talking about Cardiff as a global, not a European city?
Yeah, definitely. Cardiff is also a small capital, but as Ross said, it's only one of three, and Yeah, definitely as a global entity that we should be pushing Cardiff around the globe. With UEFA coming here and lots of, you know, the cricket the other day and the NATO summit coming to Newport and Cardiff, definitely should be pushing it as a global city. Looking at certain positions, it's been positioned as 16th at attracting or retaining skills and graduates as well. So it definitely needs to push it as a global entity. So
I think if we don't, then we're hindering ourselves, aren't we? Because in terms of we're so close to London and so much business is done internationally and kind of filtered through from there. You know, I was up at the BBC today and we had some network commissioners from BBC Two come up and there was still that perception of, oh, we had a lovely trip down from London, as if Cardiff is the other end of the world from London. And you just think, well, that perception needs to change, I think.
Okay, Janet, perception needs to change. How's it going to be changed?
Speaking as somebody who's from, I'm working and living in Swansea rather than Cardiff, you know, anything that puts Wales on the map is a good thing. I think if Cardiff's on the map, then Wales is on the map, and that can only have a multiplier effect for the rest of South Wales and Mid and North Wales as well. But we don't do enough to shout about the fantastic things that Wales has to offer. One of my previous roles, I tended to see lots of things, in particularly the universities, everybody claiming everything was world class. Clearly it's not, yet we do have some absolutely world-class things. So I think we need to focus more and target more and really try and deliver some value for Wales and really make sure that people know what we're really good at.
Okay, so on the one hand, Clyddos says we're not shouting enough, and you're also saying that you could shout too much and claim everything's world-class.
About the right things. We're not shouting enough anyway, and when we do shout, it needs to be about the right things, absolutely.
Okay, Caroline, what's your view on how Cardiff and Wales more broadly can capitalise on its strengths more and put itself on the world stage?
I think there's probably a number of strings really to Cardiff. Obviously, hosting those events gives us a great platform in terms of profile. But you know, the universities, we've got three universities in Cardiff. 70,000 students. We've got large number of international students within the area. Strong links to China, other countries around the globe in terms of, the university research and the skills we provide here. We need to build on those bridges that the universities already have worldwide. Transport links are a big thing to actually opening Cardiff up. You know, it's been great news for Cardiff Airport having Qatar Airlines coming there now. You know, Wales exports about £26 million worth of goods to Qatar in a year. That line could help open up China, Austria, Asia. You know, we need to be promoting more longer haul flights to America, other parts of the world. With Brexit, Cardiff has got to go out and all guns blazing to attract not only inward investment, which, we have a certain amount of investment already in Cardiff in terms of, German funds, Hong Kong funds, wanting to invest here. We've got to build on that and make it work for us.
Okay, thank you. And Ross, there's another question there relating to that. Qatar Airways is soon to fly into Wales. What specifically is Cardiff doing to market itself in the Gulf region? An example, there's a holiday destination, but it's more than that, potentially.
I think Caroline just touched on that. We're getting, we're talking just about Qatar, et cetera, and Dubai and everything there, but we are getting more international investors coming into South Wales. And that's happened over the last 3 to 4 years. And with the Qatar Airlines in Dubai and everything, we've got Dubai investors who are buying. They bought the big Airbus building in Newport last year. What these guys want to see, quite frankly, like most investors actually, is the return on their money. So a lot of these international investors, let's call them, they're now moving away from London because they're not getting that yield and return, which they're going to get moving out to the regions, in our instance, moving out to Cardiff specifically, in Newport, as last year. They're chasing return on their money, but they're also chasing, areas that are opening up more and where investment is going, such as Cardiff. But without a doubt, we need to try and capitalise on that more. and promote. As I said, and I agree with what we were saying before, goes back, you know, Cardiff Business Club recently, for example, had the ambassador for Dubai to speak. You know, he'd never been over to Wales before. He came over and he was, as you said, the 2-hour difference. Oh, it was only 2 hours. Came over and it was fantastic, and it's good for people like that to see. And these guys want to spend money. So we need to just keep pushing it and promoting.
And is Cardiff good value relative to other UK cities?
Yeah, well, it is a present. Depends what you're buying, but you know, you'll pay whatever, 4-5% in London. You're probably going to get 6-8% over here.
Outside of London, other UK cities, I meant.
Manchester and places like that are now pretty hot at present. But and Birmingham and the big box sheds, you know, there's some incredible yields being paid. But yeah, they're still moving away from London at present.
Okay, thank you. Let's stay on the theme of growth. And is Mark Roberts here? I'm going to swap sides. I think I'm possibly blocking some views over there, and there's fewer people over here.
Good evening, everyone. Hi, can you hear me? Yeah. My question was, the panel had one wish granted to you and you could make one change within the Welsh Government, what would you do to stimulate economic development and growth in Wales?
Caroline.
Well, it'd be nice to see a coherent approach and attracting businesses that actually complement what's already here rather than competing with what's here.
Is there an incoherent approach currently?
I think it's difficult between local authorities, Welsh Government. There's a lot of people involved for investors in terms of finding the right signposts to actually, you know, invest in the country. I think the will's there, but, you know, there's been a lot of talk. There's a lot of different bodies that have been set up. Probably with the Cardiff City region, we're probably seeing for the first time Welsh Government, 10 local authorities actually working together. We've got the potential there in going in the same direction as Manchester and the success it has in terms of bringing people together. We need Welsh Government to provide a lead, but we can't be overly dependent on Welsh Government either. You know, the private sector has got to get involved. It's just not an endless seam of public sector money. We've got to be looking at, okay, foreign investment, but that is changing with times. You're not going to get the same level of investment as it was previously that could be attracted by grants, etc. You've got to be looking at more entrepreneurial ways of stimulating growth, startup companies that have got high potential for increasing their turnovers, for, you know, reaching a global market, the creative industries, all of that has to be joined together to actually deliver for Wales and, you know, for economic growth. I don't think the Welsh Government's quite got it right yet.
Okay, Mark, what would you like to see the government do?
Well, I'd like to see a bigger economic investment team, to be honest here. I mean, back in the old days, I was still a firm believer and a fan of the WDA. I'd like to see that team a lot bigger. There's a lot of events in London and Bristol and so on that I go to, and we don't necessarily see a team from the Welsh Government there. So although we do it as a private sector, speaking to the investors and obviously trying to get them to invest in Cardiff and the rest of Wales. So I'd like to see the Welsh Assembly put a bigger team out.
Okay, resources and coherence. Janet?
So I should probably declare an interest at this point that I have formerly worked for Welsh Government and for WDA. So I can kind of see two sides to it. I'm now an organisation that works with Welsh Government, and so I see on a daily basis some of the frustrations people have. I think speed is my biggest issue. There are lots of very good people within Welsh Government trying to do a really good job, and some out, but I think a lot of them are frustrated and bogged down with the processes and the lack of mechanisms, and generally a risk-averse attitude. And I think if we're really going to make a difference in Wales, which we all want to, and I think we're all passionate about it, and we want to see investment, we want to see jobs, and we want to make a difference, I think those guys have got to be freed up to be able to make decisions and get things through. And I think just the way the Welsh Government has snapped up various organisations over the years, it's just bogged down in civil service. So speed, however that can be done, is my number one thing, and I think that would help with a greater focus.
Okay, Cleos?
We were discussing something similar before, weren't we? In terms of, I think, my sector and that frustration of possibly a lack of understanding of the sector, the need to be braver and riskier in order to have those bigger returns. If you take Pinewood, for example, you know, 30 million investment from the Welsh Government, which is great and a real support to try and get work from the big companies, you know, the kind of global heavyweights in terms of content here. But also that lack of understanding and the lack of being able to react quickly to things has meant that they've lost out. You know, that the return could be phenomenal for that. But, you know, if you're pitching for work, if you're pitching for content to big organisations like Disney, Nickelodeon, Fox, and you're saying, you know, we're a company in Wales, look at all these tax breaks you can have, look at all these incentives to come here, we've got world-class facilities for you, we've also got a Welsh Government that's willing to invest. But then, you know, by the time we've actually got round to creating pitches and investing that sum of that 30 million, they've already moved on to different countries, they've already moved on to different companies. And I think it's that, yes, there's a sense of let's do this, but there's also them getting in their own way in terms of procedures and just the length of time and the red tape that it needs to access those that support, really.
So more urgency.
Yeah, and just a greater understanding of taking, you know, you're going to have to have a higher return, there needs to be more risk-taking, doesn't there? And so not everything is going to pan out, but it's worth going for the projects that you think have at least a chance, because if you wait for those projects that are 90% likely to succeed, you're going to miss out on most of them, because it's unlike, whoever thought that Gogglebox was going to be such a success, you know, you're going to put people in front of a TV and watch them. You don't know. You don't know what's going to be successful. So I think it's taking that chance and really supporting the creative industries and believing that, you know, we do know what we're doing. And there's a, like I said before, there's a huge skill set that we need to support, I think.
Okay. Ken, risk is difficult for the public sector, isn't it?
It is, because when you take risks and the risks don't pay off, you get hammered in the press, and you can understand why some of our leaders are therefore averse to taking risks. You know, we heard the old story that, you know, if you're in California, you take risks and you lose money, you're deemed to be a better entrepreneur or a better agency. In Wales, in the UK, if you take those risks and you lose out, you get hammered in the press. So it is difficult, it requires a change of culture. But I think there's enormous opportunities here. And I think, Look at Brexit, and you look at both the challenges and the opportunities. I'd try to be positive and look at opportunities. And we can begin to look at new ways of working with business and attracting business, because we're not going to be constrained by legislation, by state aid issues. So we can begin to look again at how we interact with business. And I think there needs to be a stronger role for the private sector, using the private sector expertise. Janet quite rightly mentioned the success of the WDA in the old days, in the 70s. The reason why they were successful, because they identified market opportunities and chased them and pursued them, and they delivered a product to meet those markets. I think today we have a much, much more challenging marketplace, different type of industries, creative digital industries that do things very, very differently. I don't think we understand those drivers completely. Those cities, those regions that do understand those drivers, like Ireland, for example, Dublin, are doing exceptionally well. So I think we have an enormous opportunity now to refocus our efforts and refocus our strategy. And I hope a big part of that strategy, Cleanos talked about funding earlier, is to look again how we work with our business, how we support existing, and how we use funding to bring new businesses in. And I'd like to see a movement away from the grant culture. I'd like to see, with opportunity now provided by in a post-Brexit economy, of us moving towards a tax-based incentive, like most of the other advanced economies. Why? It's more transparent. Businesses understand it. And there's enormous opportunities outside of Europe that we can actually begin to control the sort of incentives and the tax regime that we put on the table to encourage entrepreneurs, creative businesses, large corporations and small corporations as well. So I think it's time now. If we are moving Brexit, to refocus our whole strategy and the whole way I think we deal with business. This is a great opportunity.
Okay, Ross, do the investors and potential investors you talk to see that post-Brexit economy as a land of opportunity?
Yes and no, probably. I think at the moment, because there's still an element of uncertainty exactly where we're going to go with Brexit. So there's obviously some pessimism and concern. But on the flip side, again, you know, if more's going to be now invested back into the UK as opposed to just spreading the wings for Europe and the European Union, etc., it can only be a positive. I mean, at the moment, you know, you see the FTSE is doing phenomenally well, because as much as we have our issues at the moment after the election and things, Britain actually at the moment is being seen as a pretty safe haven with everything going on, with uncertainties in Europe itself, in America with Trump. So actually there is, you know, there is strong belief that Britain will remain strong. And I think investors, you know, again, it's a far safer economy in lots of other places in the world.
Okay, and while we're on all matters European, Caroline, another question that came in earlier was, is the panel looking forward to certain EU regulations being lifted or an absence of EU regulations? Do you have a particular favourite that you'd like to see the back of?
I've got lots of favourites. I think, you know, we've been in the EU for 40 years. It's not going to be a question of leaving the EU and all these regulations, the red tape, suddenly disappear. There is a lot of unpicking to do. The EU has influenced, you know, agricultural, financial services, environment in particular. Probably on our side, on the property side, procurement is the biggest issue for us. And there's a lot of commentary at the minute as to whether or not actually it will be unpicked or whether we will have to actually retain a large amount of what is already there. The Repeal Act that's coming through, you know, the government will get to decide, you know, what it's keeping, what it's amending, what it's getting rid of, but there'll be, it'll be quite a difficult job to actually unpick all the procurement red tape and the regulations that we're currently abiding by. So I think it's going to be quite a slow process. It's not going to be a question of the red tape's going to vanish as soon as we leave the EU.
Okay. Mark O'Dew's not going anywhere in a hurry?
No, I mean, for us in construction, I mean, you know, our biggest one that we'd like taken away is procurement. I mean, it's, you know, it is a barrier for us as Welsh Indigenous companies. You know, you can score 5 marks in a pre-qual for job creation and score 0 for job retention. So it's, yeah, so I'd like to see procurement totally revamped. You know, it's certainly the biggest one with regards to construction. And those overdue notices, you know, tend to favour, you know, foreign companies. So, yeah, so it's definitely a big one for us.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on. We've got a lot of topics to get through. Is Scott Jones here? Microphone's just coming. I've realised it's even narrower on this side, so I think I might keep moving. I'm nervous about falling off the stage.
Hi, everyone. My question is, do you think recent developments such as Central Square and Capital Quarter in Cardiff will attract large firms and occupiers to open Cardiff-based offices?
Ross.
There's obviously an opportunity to... What Cardiff needs, and South Wales generally, is more inward occupiers coming in. It needs it desperately, not just Cardiff, South Wales. I think it's fantastic. Hugh James moving, Blake Morgan, Hodge Bank, etc. Brilliant. But what has happened in Cardiff for most of my life and property is being occupiers moving around from building to building. What we do need to do is bring in new occupiers as well. Yes, the likes of doing that should, we all hope, yeah, Right Acres in the room and things like that, we all hope we bring in new occupiers. That's what Cardiff needs, and that's what Ken will be trying to push and Welsh Government. Sadly, we don't see a lot of it. I don't know why. I think things such as the bridge, it probably doesn't help because it adds a property cost. So you can go to Bristol for £29-30 a foot. Cardiff's now £25-26, but you haven't got to pay a bridge toll and things like that. When that goes next year, I think that will help. Electrification, the train lines, again, should help. But without a doubt, we need to get more inward occupiers coming in because we can't just rely on our brilliant companies who are already here just relocating and moving around.
And is that off creating clusters for new sectors?
Yeah, Yeah, potentially. But you know, again, we're never going to have, because of where Cardiff, South Wales sits, you know, for example, you see in Birmingham and the Golden Triangle area, there's huge distribution chains that are being built up there. And it's brilliant. But we're not going to have that by here because we're not centrally located enough. So it's trying to go to, you know, Deutsche, for example, moving to Birmingham, Manchester recently. They moved down to London. They moved there because the rents are cheaper. It's still a very quick train line to London. So we need to be showing, actually, you can have just as good a building in Cardiff for £25 a foot instead of £50 a foot or £32 a foot. So you need to attract some of those sectors and say we can actually do it and probably better.
Okay. Caroline, can the Capital Quarter and Central Square do that?
I think it can, but we need more grade A office supply. I mean, I think with the proposed development south of the train station, Brains Brewery redevelopment site, there's a big opportunity there for more offices to be built. You know, I agree with Ross's settlements. You know, at Hugh James, we're very happy to be in a fabulous building right in the middle of the financial services district of Cardiff, next to the train station. We'll enjoy the electrification in terms of servicing clients in London and in England. But we need more grade A office space and more foreign companies or companies in the UK coming here and actually providing jobs for, you know, what is a very highly skilled, talented workforce in Cardiff and the surrounding area.
Okay, Klinos, is there the scope for the creative sector to grow significantly and take some of this space in Cardiff?
I think so. I think there's, in terms of getting content made from Wales onto broad and to other bigger channels. So there's a commitment by channels to say, right, 25% of our content is going to come from the nations and the regions. Now, that's a commitment that they've said, great, it means that there's more money coming into our economy. However, it does mean that they need to be coming here. They need to be seeing Wales Cardiff as a city that they can easily access, the perception of it, first and foremost, as soon as you step off the train, is one of, right, this is a world-class, highly competitive area that I'm going into. And I think, you know, we still, it's again about that perception of, you know, we're only a few hours away from London, yet the perception of who we are because of the image, because of kind of our past history, is that we're not quite at the same level. And I think it will make a huge visual difference in our perception in a broader sense. So I do think it would be really positive.
Okay, and Janet, is there a role for innovation more generally here to sell Cardiff as an innovation hub?
Yeah, so I suppose we'd look at it slightly differently from a property and buildings perspective. You know, buildings consume half of all energy generated. It's an absolutely massive burden, actually, as much as an opportunity for most people in the room. So what we're trying to look at is how do we create innovative buildings? How do we integrate technologies? And so what we'd like to see is the opportunity, I think, to demonstrate some of the technologies that are, you know, developed and made in Wales that can be incorporated into the buildings. And if we can offer lower energy costs in these buildings, it forms part of the attractor as to why they'd come to Wales. So it's about, I think, positioning it slightly differently. A lot of the buildings we're working with aren't necessarily the commercial sector, they're more industrial and housing. But, you know, glass PV facades and heated floor solutions, anything I think that creates the ability to lower energy costs and show innovation that's made in Wales.
Okay, I can't speak for everyone here, but I'll try. Energy tends not to be top of the property industry's mind, always.
Yeah.
How can it, is it cost that will propel it to the top?
I think ultimately, particularly in this sector, cost is obviously top of people's mind. You know, as I said, half of all energy is from buildings, so we have to find a way that if we keep making buildings in the same way, we're going to keep needing on building power stations, and there's a cost to all of us in that. Just to give you an example, if we created 1 million buildings that generate, store and release more energy than they need, you'd actually equate to 3 gigawatts of power. That, for most people who wouldn't know, is the equivalent of a nuclear power station. Yeah, so the cost and the time to build this infrastructure that we all need is putting pressure on the centralised energy infrastructure. So let's look at that challenge and turn buildings into even more valuable assets, which I'm sure is good news to most people in the audience tonight.
Okay, thank you. Kent, just going back to Scott's original question about developments like Capital Quarter and Central Square.
Yes, yes.
How are you going to attract?
Yes, they will.
They will.
They are attracting, and they will continue to attract. You know, at the end of the day, we need product, good quality product in this city.
It's more than product, though, isn't
it? No, it is much more than product, but we have to have buildings, first of all. Build it, and they will come. We can't, in the modern day, we talked about the markets earlier. Businesses today have a much shorter investment period. You can't bring a financial services business to Cardiff and show them a site. They want to see offices. So Central Square, Capital Quarter is essential, and they've been successful because of that. Yes, we need the rest of the infrastructure, a good quality environment in the city, good communications, electricity, connections to London, etc. Skills, people. Remember the cost. The major cost of any operation is people costs. So skills and costs are very, very important. But can I touch on this issue about where the occupiers are coming from? And I think we will get more occupiers from outside of Cardiff, and I'll explain that in a minute. But it's essential to look at some of the existing businesses in Cardiff. A large chunk of businesses that moved into number one Central Square moved from another part of Cardiff where they were paying perhaps £8 a square foot. They moved into Central Square, they're paying double that. Now, that's not a business moving from one part of the city to another. That's a business upgrading its business substantially, creating more value in its business in order to sustain higher rentals. So that's not a relocation. That's a business doing fundamentally different things, adding value to in order for it to pay for substantial rents. I would argue that Hugh James moving from Hodge House into Central Square, again, moving into a much more expensive unit, is much more value added, creating better quality services, getting better margins. So it's much more complicated than just, it's just for local businesses are not that perhaps worthy. Look, it's essential that we have good quality space to enable our local businesses who are adding value or moving up the value chain to move into good quality buildings. Now, the final point about new inward investment, I think it will come. It is coming. Because businesses, I think, they're beginning to see the benefits of Cardiff, but they're also been examining, particularly the financial services companies, they have been looking at alternatives to Brexit. They have been looking at locations outside of the UK. For many businesses, they've undertaken that task probably for the first time in their existence, looking at London and saying, should we be in London or part of our business be in London or should we be should elsewhere? And what we're finding, those businesses looking at those options are also now beginning to look at what they call nearshore options as well. The Cardiffs, the Swanseas, for example, the Southamptons and Bristols. So I think as a result of that exercise, there's a lot more interested in locations now outside of London. So I think you will see that. We're seeing evidence of that currently.
Okay, thank you. I feel like I've neglected blockchain far too long. And I'm sure that me saying those words is making some of our panellists nervous. Caroline, what is the likelihood of blockchain property transactions within the next 5 years?
That well-known concept of blockchain property transactions. I don't know how many people in the room actually know what a blockchain property transaction is.
Sure, Steve, hands? Come on, Steve, you should
the
know.
The panel can raise their hands as well.
Right, okay. Well, as an example of blockchain sort of technology is, you've probably heard of Bitcoin. So essentially what it is a type of secure platform where people in a transaction have limited access to materials, and the idea behind it is to increase security for a transaction. So if you're doing a deal, everybody's got to agree to changes to documents before they're locked down. When they're locked down, the data is basically encrypted onto what's a block, and the block forms a chain. And the idea behind it is it'll speed up transactions, it'll be more secure, and a more secure way of transferring money. Whether it's going to take off in the next 5 years is a completely different question. It's being the subject of some trials and pilots at the minute. The Swedish Land Registry have had a go at it, and it's been quite successful. The UK Land Registry have just done a two-month consultation on it and they're examining the results of it. I think if the land registry changed their land registry rules and make transactions more like e-conveyancing and open up the gates that way, I think you'll see a major movement in that direction. But I think at the minute it's quite early doors in terms of both the technologies and the desire to get to run with it.
And Caroline, you may not think it's necessarily likely in the next 5 years, but do you see advantages in it personally?
There's always advantages if you can get a commercial transaction, complete it quicker. I mean, we're experiencing huge challenges as law firms in terms of cybersecurity. You know, hackers have suddenly clicked that law firms actually move a lot of money about every day. So, you know, anything that secures a transaction, makes it quicker, is obviously going to be good for the economy and, you know, good for business. And I think as long as the technology actually backs it up and delivers, then, it'll be a good idea. Just trying and testing it.
Just add to that, not that I'm a blockchain expert, so don't test me. But something we're seeing is there's definitely an interest in blockchain for solar and energy trading transactions. Mm. And then I think anything that allows, you know, energy transactions between properties and between buildings and really brings alive this distributed energy at community scale, I think is fantastic. So if this could be an enabler of that and make it more secure and faster, then that's going to be good news.
Okay, should we move on to another subject where the entire panel feels
comfortable?
Jill Woodward.
Is Cardiff City Centre becoming a student village?
Hang on to the microphone, Bill. I'll come back to you and see what you think in a moment. Ken.
Cardiff City Centre is becoming a growth zone in attracting student accommodation. Now, student accommodation is being attracted there. Why? Because the city is growing in terms of student population. And I guess on the other hand as well, the university have decided to let the private sector get on with the provision of student accommodation. But really the growth in students in the city, you know, is driving demand. And for I'll leave other panelists to talk about the profitability of the student accommodation. It appears to be extremely profitable. And therefore, it's competing with a significant number of competing for a significant number of sites. Now, as a civil servant, let me give you a balanced response.
When asked, is it
advantageous? I say yes, because I say to investors who are looking at office accommodation and they see student accommodation popping up across the road, I say, well, it's a great news for you because you have access to good quality labour, term time, nighttime shifts, twilight shifts and whatever. So it does build up the population, labour force population within the central area. So and that is and has been seen to be a positive factor from businesses. One of the challenges we do have, however, is that we still need to provide good quality accommodation and sites for business and employment in the city centre. And the challenge at the moment is that some of those sites are being acquired by student accommodation developer. So we have to maintain the balance. We can't flood the city centre with student accommodation and leave them take over most of the employment sites. So there has to be a balance in this strategy of retaining good quality sites that meets the needs of businesses and commercial investors, as well as provide growth for student accommodation. And that's one of the challenges that we're grappling with at the moment.
Ross, is that the case that investors see the benefits of a lot of student accommodation blocks around the commercial buildings they're investing in?
I have to say, I think in the last, will the prime office location has shifted, as we've just said earlier. Central Square, Callaghan Square, Capital Quarter, etc. So those buildings which have been on Newport Road, places like that, you aren't going to get occupiers who are going to go to those buildings anymore because their shift is towards more modern, better quality buildings. So with the market we've had in the last 5 to 10 years, let's call this, if you didn't have that student sector that's come in and has had a huge growth spurt, those buildings probably wouldn't be viable for many of the uses. So you've had the ability to change the use from offices into student, which has been good, because otherwise half the buildings in Newport Road would be empty, which wouldn't be great. And also, this is from a planning perspective, it's planning is tricky on the residential because it can be very expensive and that make it unviable because of the costs involved in getting a residential scheme. A student scheme, you might not have as high a cost from a planning perspective and the Section 106 type obligations and the affordable element and things like that, which kills a residential scheme. So students are more viable from that perspective. So it's good from that regard. And some of these buildings, you know, God, the new ones that are flowing up at the moment, Fusion's one behind Newport Road, it looks like a very smart student scheme, far smarter than the days I was in university. But yes, there has to be a balance though now, and I agree with Ken, you need residential, you need better residential. But on the flip of that, planning has to be realistic because, as I said, the affordable elements and things like that in planning for residential kills a residential scheme. So it's a balance. But investors at the moment love, you know, we're selling a building on Newport Road at the moment. We took an investor there earlier, Shant House, if anyone wants to buy it. but we've had 4 viewings this week, we've got 3 or 4 next week. And these investors are all London funds wanting to put money into Cardiff, which is good. So that's good for Cardiff. Will the market keep going? I said a couple of years ago, I thought the student market might cool a bit. Still seems to be going at the moment, but probably rents will drop a bit in that sector.
Jill, do you think Cardiff's becoming a student village and is that a bad thing if it is?
I think I agree with the point about having to maintain balance and the role of the planners in that. And I think some of the schemes that we're seeing proposed at the moment, for example, at the corner of Fitzalan Place and Newport Road next to the Mercure Holland Hotel, how justifiable a scheme of high-rise, 464 units or whatever it is in keeping with that part of town debate. I think there are challenges there.
Okay, thank you. Janet?
From a university perspective, I suppose, again, I'd look at it slightly differently. I think anything that, you know, increases the quality and the calibre of students is a good thing. You know, it ties back directly to us wanting to attract inward investment. Skills is a critical element of that. So I think anything that encourages, you know, the growth of students in the universities is good. The quality of students is good. And let's be honest, there's a lot of overseas students coming in now. So not only are you having, you know, inward investment financially for the property development, you're bringing in a lot of money in terms of fees and, you know, the spending of money in the areas. So I think that's all really positive. I agree it's got to be balanced. But, you know, students at the end of the day are now paying customers, unfortunately, some might say. However, and that means, you know, they're going to be picky and choosy where they want to go and where they want to live. So, yeah, times are changing.
Okay, Ben Stevenson had a related question. Ben?
Thank you. Yes, just trying to remember it now. How do we secure a wider range of residential development within Cardiff other than the present domination of student developments? Should, for example, build to rent be exempt or subject to reduced affordable housing and SIL requirements in order to compete with student schemes which are presently exempt from SIL and Section 106 contributions or much lower levels?
Ken, I was talking to a PRS developer in London this week who said his acquisitions director had been up to Cardiff and liked the look of the city. I'm sure he'd like it even more if there was some, you know, some consideration within the planning system that incentivised build to rent, perhaps ahead of student. Ross touched on it as well. Might that happen?
I think when we look at affordable, we try to look at it in a sensible basis. And there are schemes in the city where the viability study has not worked. We haven't insisted on affordable accommodation, and I think that will continue. So it'll be down to the developer to come up with the viability appraisal. So there's no hard and fast rules here. We haven't said yes, Yeah, you have to have particular targets. If the viability appraisal doesn't work, we're prepared to negotiate on some schemes in Cardiff. We've relinquished responsibility for delivering affordable homes. On other sites, we haven't. So it comes down to the viability appraisal and the market, really.
Okay, let's move on to a couple of infrastructure questions. Chris Brown.
Hi, it's a question to do with the new metro. We've got the bidders lining up for the new regional rail franchise. And it's a question as to whether there should be any parts of the city where we should be considering having new rail lines laid. Do any panellists have any thoughts on areas which ought to have a rail service added?
Mark.
I mean, it's a no-brainer for me, but I mean, it's got to be the Cardiff Wales Airport connection, to be honest with you. So looking at the metro map, the first and important one, I think, is for us bringing clients in and so on, is the link to Cardiff Wales Airport. We certainly saw that with the UEFA final, with the buses and so on. If we had a high-speed link direct into the city, we do a lot of work up in Newcastle, up in Teesside. You get off at Newcastle Airport, walk down the ramp, and you're straight onto the Metrolink. So I think that is high priority for us as construction and inward investment.
Okay, Ross, are there areas that you'd like to see better served by rail?
Well, yes, obviously St Mellons is trying to look at it at the moment with St Mellons Business Park and things. But without a doubt, around the city, if there was a metro, it would help. We've got the Valleys train link going into Queen Street and things. Yeah. But the cities who do have it, Manchester, etc., it seems to help vastly. So, yeah, great if it came in. Yeah.
Okay, another infrastructure question. Robert Woollacott.
My question, looking toward the future, whether the panel think the Cardiff Tidal Lagoon will go ahead, and if so, what benefits that will bring to Cardiff and the region.
Janet.
Well, I'd hope the Swansea one would have gone ahead by now. a West Whelian. I think at the end of the day, anything that is going to encourage investment and increase the ability for local supply chains to get involved is going to be a good thing. Whether the Swansea one happens, the Cardiff one happens, anything in terms of renewable energy that can be feeding in is a positive aspect. If we move forward and we start developing buildings that are of the approach we're suggesting, which can generate energy, you could be dumping a lot of the energy that is created at high tide in the middle of the night into the properties. So there's a whole load of solutions. So the sooner they all happen, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah, I mean it's a no-brainer, isn't it? I mean, on the energy side, we've got a shortage of clean, renewable energy. Swansea should have been signed up a long time ago. Hopefully, it'll get done in the next few months. Hopefully, Theresa May and Greg Clark will. Sign that bit of paper and Alan Carnes and so on. But with regards to, I think it's a massive investment and a massive return economy-wise for Swansea and Cardiff. Swansea's 1.3 billion in construction. Cardiff will be 8 billion in construction. Swansea one will create, I think it's 1,000 jobs during the construction stage. The Cardiff one will create 11,000 jobs. So, on a construction point of view, it's a must. It's a total no-brainer. So hopefully Westminster can sign on that dotted line soon.
Okay, thank you. And David Willis.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. What benefits do you see ahead for Wales and Cardiff given the planned scrapping of the Severn Bridge toll next year and also the new routes that we're seeing for Cardiff Wales Airport?
Caroline.
I think it's going to be very, very beneficial, really. I mean, the toll bridge, obviously, at the minute with cars, you know, £6.70, you know, lorries, vans paying £25, it's an inhibitor to business. It's an inhibitor to bringing talent from, you know, the southwest to opening up the regions. I think, you know, with the scrapping of the toll, with hopefully the M4 relief road and Cardiff Airport, bringing all those things together are obviously going to help open up the economy and the marketplace, really. So, you know, it's hugely beneficial. It's been a barrier to business and, you know, free movement of talent, as far as I can see.
Klenos, do you see it as an obstacle?
Yeah, in terms of that free movement of talent, I definitely agree. You know, we've got an awful lot of the creative industry happening in Bristol outside of London. And it's a hindrance in terms of people living in Bristol having that obstacle to come and work in Cardiff and vice versa, especially when there's an awful lot of work going on in Bristol. And I think there is that sense of creating a wider connected sector. And that seems to be so close, yet so such an obstruction to get through. And I think anything that can make it easier, that can attract people and that flow both ways, is only going to be a benefit, really.
And how about air connectivity? Is that an obstacle as well to some of the, you know, productions that you'd like to see delivered?
I mean, yes, again, because whenever we're asking kind of broadcasters to come over for meetings, we tend to have to go out, and we go out every year, a couple of times a year, to a festival out in Cannes in order to do business. You know, we always fly from Bristol, and in terms of making the ease of getting investors and getting people that have the money to spend in creating content, anything that can make it easier and more attractive is going to be of benefit definitely to us and to the wider sector and to the wider economy, really.
Okay, thank you. I think we should end on a controversial note. And a question that came in on Slido earlier was, do you think that Welsh independence would create more opportunities and economic growth for Wales? Ross?
No. I don't think the Welsh government should be given any more power, my honest view. I think at times they are a hindrance, and I think You've got developers here, you've got investors who want to come here, you've got pension funds, et cetera, who want to come here. The developers of pension funds, I'll use Ken's words, will build happily. So government, whether it's Welsh government or national government, focus on helping the funds, the developers, the investors, because, you know, to bring these occupiers and things like that. Don't meddle with it. Do what they do. Leave the private sector to do what they do. And I personally don't think Welsh government having tax raising powers, having more control, would help.
So not only no to independence, but no to any further devolution?
No.
That's quite emphatic.
Yeah.
Should we have a quick poll of the audience? Who thinks that independence would bring benefits? A smattering. One and a half, I think. I'll count those two. Mark?
Yeah, I'm total agreement with Ross. You know, devolution and independence is a definite no. We're too small. GBA is too low. You know, so we need the backing of Westminster. You know, we need that connection, obviously, with the eastern region. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Welsh through and through, but no, we're just too small as a Welsh region, unfortunately.
Ken, independence or further devolution?
As a civil servant, you wouldn't want me to address. The way I would address it, I think what we're beginning to see and what we hope, you know, will happen is more devolution to cities. The city deal process, which has been active in England and Scotland, is moving on. In Manchester, for example, it started off as a traditional city deal infrastructure. Transportation, now it's moved into Manchester having a proportion of the NHS budget to deliver local services. So I think what we, you know, I would like to see is perhaps more activity in looking at how we can devolve more powers to cities, because cities are the agents of growth, drivers of growth, which has been established, and I think that, you know, should be the priority when we look for changes in the future.
And what are there particular powers you think, if you were armed with, you could deliver greater economic benefits?
Well, you know, for example, the English cities have raise the rates and spend their rate money, for example. Also, some innovative forms of financing, like tax incremental financing, for example, that allows a local authority to draw a red line around an area, and if that development is successful and it generates more rates for the city, those rates can be used locally to be spent to be spent elsewhere. So there's a whole range of things now being pushed through and tested elsewhere. And obviously, I think we in Wales, for all of our cities, need to be looking at what is next. City deal, yes, first stage, but like other cities elsewhere, that has moved on. So I think I'd like to look at how we move on and how we attract additional powers and funding locally.
Thank you. Janet, a fan of independence?
Not really, no. I think we should be an outward-looking nation. I think we should be looking to work with others. I think we should be taking what we're good at and finding people who are better at other things and putting it all together. And it could be perceived that if we went down that route, that we kind of start looking inward and being very introverted. And I don't think that's a good thing for Wales. We're not, you know, a fantastic opportunity for Wales is how small we are and we can get stuff done. Mm. So we should do that collaboratively with other people, I think. And we just can't do that on our own. I don't think that's the kind of Wales that we want in the future.
Okay, I'm sensing agreement around the panel. Quinlos, are you going to make a case for independence?
I'm a Welsh-speaking gog, so my heart says yes, independence, but I think my head, for all the reasons that you've just named, being outward-looking, wanting to be on that wider platform and to be influential from that point of view and collaboration, I don't know whether it's controversially the right thing. I'm going really quiet. My parents would be ashamed.
Your heart and head became disengaged
yes,
then, I think.
Yeah.
And Caroline, independence... And also, do you have a favourite tier of government to deal with that others could learn from?
As an Irish person, obviously my view on independence is slightly coming at it from a different perspective. But having lived in Wales for over 20 years, I would still say no to independence. But I'm very much influenced by the fact I've grown up, worked for a while in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland plays a lovely game of... You know, we'll use the UK for the best economic benefits that we can have. You know, we'll use our border with Ireland to make the most of it. And I think, you know, in the world that we're moving into, Wales will benefit a lot more from using all its borders, all its connections. And that doesn't necessarily mean setting sail by itself.
Okay, a strong pragmatic note to end on there. I think. Thank you all very much for coming. Thank you for your questions. Thank you to our supporters tonight, Savills, Hugh James, City, Cardiff Council, and Andrew Scott Construction. And please do join me in thanking our panel.